Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Nimhauser. You can find me on YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, anywhere at Hawk Blogger. And I've already got my throat. I got to clear. Excuse me. I hope you guys are all enjoying a beautiful Wednesday morning here in the Pacific Northwest. Looks fantastic. Certainly got outside yesterday and the day before. We'll see if I can do the same today. But I got a good show for you. And this show is not just going to be for Seahawks fans. If you happen to come across this show and this episode and are wondering if you're just going to get a Seattle thing, I wanted to go look back at the 2023 draft. And I wanted to look at all the teams and see which teams did the best, which teams did the worst 2 years in. And so I'm going to go through and give you attempting to be unbiased perspective. Now, obviously, as a Seahawks fan, I'm going to have a little bias, but I'll give you the straight numbers and some of the data around which teams did the most with the draft capital that they had. And so I've got the amount of draft capital each team had. I have the amount of all-pro appearances for each team cumulatively across their draft class. I've got the number of Pro Bowl seasons across the draft classes. I've got the number of games started or the seasons as a starter across the draft classes, as well as a number called approximate value, or AV. That's a derived value from Pro Football Reference that you can also use as a way to kind of assess the value of any given player. So I will share the rankings of all of that with you across all the NFL teams from 2023. And I also have created a ranking mechanism that will basically divide the amount of approximate value that you got from that draft class by the amount of draft capital that you had, and basically rank from 1 to 32 the best and worst draft classes from 2023, at least so far, 2 years in. And 2 years in is a decent time to start assessing draft classes. Generally, people say 3 years. I think, you know a lot by 2 years in. It does not mean that they're all said and done, but I think we have a pretty good idea at this point who's going to be a pretty good player and who's not. So I'm going to share all of that with you. Before I do, if you give the show a like and click subscribe, I would really appreciate it. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, hopefully you're having a great start to your Wednesday morning or Wednesday evening or Thursday. You know, I know there's people across the world who tune in. So appreciate all of you for giving the show a like and clicking subscribe. I will also, toward the end, I will talk a little bit about some Seahawks specific news around visits and updates to the visits that have been made to Seattle. So we'll talk about that toward the end. Might have some time for mock draft. Also, be aware that today is a double pod Wednesday. We'll be on this evening with Nathan Ernst and Jeff Simmons on Real Hawk Talk. So I will see you back here. I think 6 p.m. Pacific is when we're shooting for. So keep an eye out on that. And we will have more fun. Probably do a little bit mock draft in that show for sure. Be fun to do that with Nathan and Jeff. Last quick announcement before we get into it. I am going to, by popular demand, I'm going to bring back the NFL draft first round projection game that we did last year. I will make this available to all Patreon members at patreon.com/hawkblogger, as well as all club level and higher YouTube members. I will post the link to the sheet where you can go in and add your predictions for who's going to get picked in the first round, in what order, to what teams, project trades, all that stuff. We'll have some fun with it like we did last year. And there's some pretty good, pretty impressive results last year. So we'll see if you guys can top what happened a year ago. Look out for more details there. Okay. So with all that aside, let's start talking about the 2023 draft. And let's just start by kind of refamiliarizing ourselves with, you know, who was in that class? What was that class? How did it come to be? Well, this was the year where Bryce Young was the top pick in the draft. And as a lot of folks remember, the Panthers gave up quite a bit of draft capital to get that pick. In fact, I'm looking back to make sure I've got the right trade here, but it was Panthers. Okay, yes. The Bears traded the first pick overall to the Panthers for the ninth pick of the 2023 draft, a second round pick, 61 overall, a 2024 first round pick, and a 2025 second round pick, and DJ Moore. That's a lot. The Bears essentially, for the giving up that number one pick, got Brenton Strange, Caleb Williams, a 2025 second round pick that they haven't used yet, DJ Moore, as well as what became, let's see, what was it? The ninth overall pick that they traded. So Darnell Wright, they traded back to get the 10th pick. So as quite a haul that the Bears got for just that first pick overall. The Panthers picked Bryce Young. Then it went CJ Stroud to Houston. Remember, Houston traded back and then or traded up to get the second and the third pick in the draft. So they had CJ Stroud, Will Anderson. The Colts drafted Anthony Richardson at 4. The Seahawks took Devin Witherspoon at 5. The Cardinals took tackle Paris Johnson at 6. This is after Detroit traded out of that pick. The Raiders took Tyree Wilson at 7. Bijan Robinson to the Falcons at 8. Jalen Carter. Yes, Jalen Carter at 9 to the Eagles. Darnell Wright at 10 to the Bears, as I mentioned. And then I'll go through the top 15 at least. Pete Skoronski goes to the Titans, the guard. Jahmyr Gibbs to the Lions at 12. Lucas Van Ness, the edge rusher, to the Packers at 13. Broderick Jones, the tackle, to the Steelers at 14. And then Will McDonald, the edge rusher, to the Jets at 15. So that was the top 15 picks. It could give you a little bit of an idea. And this was a draft where there were some pretty big finds for various teams. And if even if you go down through the first round, you had the run on receivers in the 20s where the Seahawks took Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and then the Chargers took Quentin Johnston, and then the Ravens took Zay Flowers, and then Minnesota took Jordan Addison. Three of those four have worked out pretty well. One of them has not. You saw a guy like Will Levis tumble all the way into the second round, second pick of the second round to the Titans. That has not worked out so well. Right after Will Levis was picked, the Lions took Sam Laporta, the tight end. They took him right before the Raiders took Michael Mayer, the tight end, who has had mixed results. So a lot of interesting picks in this draft. And there's a lot of ways to look at draft capital. And the way that I chose to use it, because it was the one where I could find two numbers I was looking for. One, I was looking for a ranking of 1 through 32, stack rank of who had the most to the least draft capital in 2023. And then the other was some sort of points value for that capital. And so I found this. Warren Sharp had written an article for, I think, you know, Fox Sports at the time. This is still posted, his ranking of draft capital ahead of the draft and the total draft value points. And this was prior to the draft. So draft day trades are not going to be accounted for, but let's not get too crazy with this. So I've got those numbers, and heading into the draft, the Houston Texans had the most draft capital. The Seahawks had the second most, the Lions, the Raiders, the Bears, the Cardinals, the Panthers, the Colts, the Packers, and the Patriots rounded out the top 10. The bottom of the charts in terms of draft capital, the bottom five teams, the 49ers were at 28, the Ravens were 29, the Vikings were 30th, the Broncos were 31st, and the Dolphins were 32nd. Too often people do draft rankings and grades without considering the amount of capital that the team had to use. And so I wanted to avoid doing that. Hopefully I will have successfully avoided doing that. And so you'll hear me kind of go through that. I will do that last. The first thing I'm going to do is share with you a couple of different kinds of ways to rank these classes. So the first thing I'm going to do is just tell you how many all-pro players, how many teams drafted all-pro players, because ultimately you're looking for blue chip game-changing players. How many teams drafted all-pro players in the 2023 class? You might be surprised to find out there's only been five teams that have had all-pro players from that draft class. And that is stretching depending on your definition. If you wanted to say first-team all-pro players, there's only been one team that had a first-team all-pro player. That was the Denver Broncos, and that was kick returner Marvin Mims. So, you know, as far as position players go, there has been zero first-team all-pros from this draft class. I don't think that's that unusual within the first 2 years of a draft class, but it is the reality. But I wanted to go back and look at second-team all-pros as well. And there's a lot of ways. All-pros, I'm going to stick with AP all-pros. That's kind of the classic all-pro team. And I looked at second-team for that. There was also the PFF second-team or first-team. There are the Pro Football Writers, which I'm a member of. There's all sorts of other all-pro teams. I decided to limit it just to the AP all-pro teams. If you include second team AP All Pros, there have been five teams that had at least a second team AP All Pro. The LA Rams, Puka Nacua was a second team All Pro as a rookie. New England Patriots, Christian Gonzalez, the cornerback, was a second team All Pro last year in his second season. The Lions, and I want to double check this, make sure I've got the right guy here. I believe it was Sam Laporta as a rookie. Yes, Sam Laporta as a rookie was a second team all pro. I already mentioned the Broncos with Mims as the kick returner. And then the Eagles, Jalen Carter was a second team all pro last season in his second year. So those are the teams, five teams that have drafted. And I would say four teams really that have drafted what are clearly already blue chip players. If you make an all-pro team, first or second team, you are one of the best players at that position in the entire league. That's what blue chip means. So those teams had success independent of anything else I'll talk about today. And again, those teams, the Rams, the Patriots, the Lions, and the Eagles. We'll see how many times those names come up when we talk about best draft classes in this 2023 draft. Another way to look at this is Pro Bowls. What about which teams had the most Pro Bowl seasons? And this is, if you were a Pro Bowler in your first year and your second year, that would count as two Pro Bowl seasons. Well, the Detroit Lions. Well, first of all, let me just tell you the count. There are eight teams that have had a player, at least one player, make a Pro Bowl. Okay. Eight teams from the 2023 draft have at least one player that have made a Pro Bowl. Those teams are Detroit, and I'll go in order. Detroit has four such players. And when we look at that, that is Sam Laporta, Jahmyr Gibbs, and then Brian Branch has, Jahmyr Gibbs has two Pro Bowl seasons. Sam Laporta and Brian Branch each have one each, which is where you get the four total Pro Bowl seasons. The Seahawks are next with three. The Seahawks have three. So the Lions have four Pro Bowl seasons out of this class. The Seahawks have three. And the Seahawks Pro Bowlers are I'm just looking for accounts here. Devin Witherspoon has had two, And then Jackson Smith and Jigba has had one. So that is the three there. So you've got three different players that have made the Pro Bowl in each of their first two seasons from the entire 2023 class. Those players are Devin Witherspoon, Jahmyr Gibbs, and then Marvin Mims, again, as a kick returner. So I think he's a little bit of an asterisk in all this. You could almost just remove him from the list. If you want, from a position player perspective, there's only been two. Jahmyr Gibbs and Devin Witherspoon are the only two in the entire 2023 class that have made the Pro Bowl in both of their first two seasons. After the Seahawks, the Broncos, as I said, with Mims. Then you've got the Houston Texans. And the Houston Texans had Will Anderson make one and CJ Stroud make one. So that's where they get their two Pro Bowl seasons from this class. The Rams have one, interestingly. They have an all-pro, but only one Pro Bowl. That was Puka Nacua as well, his rookie season. So that's their one Pro Bowler. The Eagles have one, and that is Jalen Carter. And then the Ravens and the Falcons each have one. The Ravens have Zay Flowers, and the Falcons have Bijan Robinson. Those are the whole list of Pro Bowl players from the 2023 draft class. I'll read them again. This is just top to bottom. The guys that have made it at least one Pro Bowl season: Bijan Robinson, Zay Flowers, Marvin Mims, Sam Laporta, Jahmyr Gibbs, Brian Branch, CJ Stroud, Will Anderson, Puka Nacua, Jalen Carter, Devin Witherspoon, and Jackson Smith and Jigba. If you noted there, the Lions are the only team to have three different players from that class make the Pro Bowl. Huge, huge accomplishment within their first 2 years to have three players. The Seahawks have two players, as do the Texans. They both have two players. Nobody else has more than one Pro Bowler from the 2023 draft class. So that is that group. And let me take a pause as I'm going through this. I want to make sure I'm not missing anything on chat. Sorry. Hard to have all these screens up in front of me. And if you're on TikTok, sorry, you're not going to be able to see. I'm not going to be sharing anything. I'm just talking you through it. I'll get to super chats here in a little bit. So appreciate you all. So that is the list of teams that have had Pro Bowl players: Detroit, Seattle, Denver, Houston, Rams, Eagles, Baltimore, and Falcons from the 2023 class. When you get into amount of years as a primary starter, this is another way to look at this. This is compiled by Pro Football Reference. This indicates a player was designated as a primary starter for their team. And each season that they are, quote, a primary starter, that will count. And so how they determine primary starter is likely by number of games started, but just wanted to give you some idea of this. I'm not going to go through every player that's a primary starter, but I will give you the rank of the amount of what I'm calling starter seasons that different teams pulled out of this draft. So the two teams at the top that have got the most starters out of this, or the most starting seasons out of this. So again, if you started both first and second year, that would count as two. The Houston Texans and the Pittsburgh Steelers both have gotten 7 years or seven starter seasons out of this class. The Seattle Seahawks, the Rams, and the Jaguars. So the Lions, the Seahawks, the Rams, the Patriots, and the Jaguars are tied for second with six starter seasons. All right. So again, that's Houston and Pittsburgh at top with seven, then Detroit, Seattle, the Rams, the Patriots, the Jags with six. The next tier after that, Green Bay, Chargers, Buffalo, Chicago, Indianapolis and Arizona have five starter seasons from the 2023 class. After that, you get to the Falcons, the Bucks, the Bengals, the Titans, the Giants, and the Raiders with four starter seasons out of their draft classes in 2023. Then you get to Baltimore and the Jets with three, Minnesota, Dallas, Cleveland, San Francisco, and Carolina with two, and bringing up the bottom, Denver, Philadelphia, interestingly, Philadelphia down here at the bottom, Miami, Kansas City, New Orleans, and Washington with only one starter season from their classes. It's pretty interesting with the Eagles. I think it probably depends. Obviously, Jalen Carter probably didn't count as a starter in his first, in his rookie year. Fletcher Cox was still there. You know, they, I think Javon Hart, no, he was not. They're still there, but they had a pretty stacked roster. So some of those guys probably weren't getting snaps, but as we said, the one guy that became a starter there certainly has accomplished quite a bit. So last thing I'll share here before I get into kind of overall rankings of these draft classes, and I'll talk to you about some of the players that were in these classes once I get to the rankings top to bottom. The teams that had the highest approximate value, and again, this is derived from Pro Football Reference, the teams, if you aggregate, you sum up all the approximate value from every draft pick in 2023, here are the teams, according to Pro Football Reference, that had the highest AV from the draft so far. The Houston Texans with 81, then the Rams with 74, the Lions with 72, the Seahawks with 67, the Packers with 64, round out the top five. So again, the Texans, the Rams, the Lions, the Seahawks, and the Packers, the top five in terms of approximate value. The bottom five in terms of approximate value from the 2023 class, the Minnesota Vikings with 22, the Denver Broncos with 21, the Cleveland Browns with 19, the San Francisco 49ers with 16, and the Washington Commanders also with 16. So let's get to the fun part here. I think this is all fun personally, but let's get to the fun part where we've got this number where I don't think you will have seen this anywhere else. If you take the approximate value that a team got from every pick in their 2023 class and you divide it by the amount of draft capital they had, you end up with a ratio of basically how much value did you get for your draft capital. And this is a way to look at the draft to say how much value did you extract from all the capital that you had to spend. So if you only had two picks and you had the same amount of AV that you pulled out of the draft as a team that had 10 picks, that says something, right? That says you actually drafted pretty well given your draft capital, or the other team drafted pretty poorly, or both. So here I'm going to go through all 32 rankings and I'm going to give you these. I'm going to go through the rankings one to N, and then I'm going to go through some of these classes. Okay. So I'm going to go actually from worst to best. All right. The absolute worst draft class in 2023, the Washington Commanders have a 0.276. These numbers don't really mean anything, so I'm not going to read the numbers, but I'll share them a little bit later because it gives you a idea of the spread for these teams. But Washington Commanders had the 15th most draft capital in the draft, and they had the least amount of AV elicited from that class. Keep in mind, and again, I'll get into the number, the players here, like Emmanuel Forbes, their first round pick, isn't even with the team anymore. So really, really atrocious draft class for the Washington Commanders in 2023. Part of why that group no longer is in Washington running that front office. All right. Second worst, so 31st ranked, the Carolina Panthers, then the San Francisco 49ers, at 30th. Then the Las Vegas Raiders, 29th. The New Orleans Saints, 28th. The Cleveland Browns, 27th. The Dallas Cowboys, 26th. The Jets, 25. The Giants, right there behind the New York teams, right next to each other at 24. The Kansas City Chiefs at 23. The Minnesota Vikings at 22. The Arizona Cardinals at 21. We're going to come back to this one because the Raiders and the Cardinals ranking at the bottom of this list, near the bottom of this list, Arizona had the sixth highest draft capital. The Raiders were the fourth highest, and both of them end up so far with two of the least valuable draft classes given the amount of draft capital they had to spend. The Eagles come in at 20th, the Colts at 19th, the Broncos at 18, the Falcons at 17, the Bears at 16, the Seahawks at 15, the Titans at 14, the Steelers at 13, the Texans at 12. And remember, the Texans had the number one most draft capital in this draft. The Lions at 11. And this is where we'll debate this, whether this is a good way or a bad way to assess draft value. They had the third most draft capital. They end up outside the top 10 in rankings, even though they had the most Pro Bowlers and one of the only All-Pros, a second team All-Pro in Sam Laporta. Then we get to the Bengals at 11. Who do you guys think? Show me in chat. Who do you think is going to be ranked number one? Who's your top three? Do you think it's going to be the top three draft classes? We are at the top 10. The Jacksonville Jaguars are the Bengals were number 10. The Jacksonville Jaguars are 9. The Buffalo Bills, 8. The Patriots, 7. The Chargers, 6. The Packers, 5. We're to the top 5. The Bucks, 4. The Dolphins, 3. The Ravens, 2. And that leaves the Los Angeles Rams, number 1 in terms of, for the amount of capital they had, the amount of AV that they got was number 1. They are the only team that got more draft cap, more AV, like higher than a 1.0 ratio, where they got more AV per draft capital point that they had. So they had the 21st most draft capital in 2023. They had the second most AV of any team. Also, they had 6 starter years. They had a Puka Nacua as both an A second team All Pro and a Pro Bowler. So by almost any measure, the Rams had one of the best draft classes. And so let's talk about who was in that class. Who was in that class for the Rams? The Rams took their first pick was not until the second round. They didn't even have a first round pick in 2023. They took Steve Avila, who was a center slash guard, started for them. They took Byron Young, the edge rusher, who has been a starter for them for 2 seasons. They took Kobe Turner, who was a defensive rookie of the year, candidate, at least. And let me double check. He was definitely on the all-rookie team. And then they took Stetson Bennett, the quarterback, who's been really nothing for them. Nick Hampton, who's been not much. Warren McClendon, who's not on the team anymore. Davis Allen, tight end. And then Puka Nacua in the 5th round, pick 177. That is their big hit. And like all big hits in late rounds, it's a little bit mixed. People are like, oh man, the Rams unbelievable. They got Puka Nacua in the fifth round. Well, if the Rams had any idea Puka Nacua was even close to the player that he has become, they would not have waited to the fifth round to draft him. So even the Rams were not sold on Puka Nacua. They had not one, not two, not three. They had four fifth round picks. And in fact, they had pick 174, 175, and 177. So they had three picks in out of four in the fifth round. Puka Nacua is the last of their fifth round picks. So don't tell me that the Rams have some kind of soothsayer ability. They got him. They got the most out of him and they get credit for it. But I don't think this means the Rams have some kind of unbelievable ability to find talent in the late rounds. Tre'Davious Tomlinson was their next pick. Ochon Mathis, Zach Evans, Ethan Evans, the punter, Jason Taylor, and Deshaun Johnson, a defensive tackle. So, you know, the Rams, without having a first-round pick, really hit it out of the park with this draft class. They've got a number of really solid starters to Pro Bowl-level players to some All-Pro-level players within the first two seasons. So this is definitely, I don't think there's any question it should be in the discussion for best of the draft classes so far. The Ravens were the second in the ranking. And again, keep in mind, this is ranking it based off of the draft capital you had and the value that you got for that draft capital. So this isn't saying it's the most talented class. It is the most efficient class. You got the most value for what you had to spend. The Ravens had the 29th most draft capital. And for that, what did they get? Let's take a look. The Ravens drafted Zay Flowers in the first round, who has been a Pro Bowler and a two-year starter. They got Trenton Simpson, who was a starter last year for them. Tavius Robinson, defensive end. Caillou Blue-Kelly, who's no longer with the team, cornerback. They took an offensive lineman. They took Andrew Voorhees, who I think is probably going to be a starter. So that was who they got. Small draft class. But within that class, you get a Pro Bowler. That's pretty good. And that's driving a lot of the approximate value that they're getting. Trenton Simpson, also being a starter, has a decent amount of approximate value. So that's where the Ravens get some credit for their class. I don't think that anyone would say that that's a better class than the Lions class, for example, where you have, we'll talk about that, but Jahmyr Gibbs and Sam Laporta. That was a pretty special class, but we'll talk about that in a second. The next highest, at least efficient, most efficient class, the Miami Dolphins, who had the 32nd ranked draft capital. So this is where I think there's a flaw in the process, because basically this is saying, well, Miami got a starter even though they had no value. And so Devon Achane, as well as Cam Smith, the corner. But really, this is Devon Achane thing, as well as they drafted Elijah Higgins and Ryan Hayes, an offensive lineman. And so Higgins at wide receiver has done a little bit for them. But Achane has been a pretty good player when healthy. And so despite having the least amount of draft capital, they had no first round pick. They had a second and a third round pick, but no fourth or fifth or fourth or fifth. They got Achane in the third. So efficiency-wise, they did pretty good. After them is the Tampa Bay Bucks, who had the 18th most draft capital. And the Bucks had an interesting draft. The Bucks took Kalijah Kancey in the first round, 19th overall. He's been a starter and been a productive player. They took Cody Mauch, the guard, who was a tackle, they converted to guard. He's been a two-year starter for them, so they get a lot of value for that in the second round. They took Yaya Diaby, the edge rusher, who's been a pretty good player for them, in the third round. So those are three pretty good picks, giving them a lot of value and deriving most of their value. Then they took Servoche Dennis in the fifth round, Payne Durham in the fifth round, Josh Hayes in the sixth round, Trey Palmer, Jose Ramirez in the sixth round. So this was really about their first three picks, Kancey, Mauch, and Diaby. They've gotten a lot of value from those guys, and that's a pretty efficient class. There's a lot of talent in the 2023 class. And the Bucks did pretty well for themselves, despite not having a lot of capital to work with. The Packers had the ninth most draft capital. And in their class, they ended up with Lucas Van Ness, who has been a really up and down kind of player for them. Luke Musgrave, the tight end, who's not played nearly as much, but that's, like, interestingly, they didn't hit as much on their early picks. Those are their first and their first second round pick. Then they got Jaden Reed, the wide receiver. It's been a pretty good player for them. Tucker Kraft, the tight end, has been a pretty good player for them. Then it goes Colby Wooden, the defensive end, Sean Clifford, the quarterback, not much there. Then they get Dontavian Wicks, the wide receiver, in the fifth round. He has been a dang good player for them, especially as a fifth round pick. Carl Brooks, the defensive tackle, has been a decent player for them as a sixth round pick. Anders Carlson, the kicker, has given some value. And then Carrington Valentine, the seventh rounder, the defensive back, has given them some value as a cornerback. And then Anthony Johnson, also a defensive back in the seventh round. So they got a lot of late round value from really Jaden Reed on. Jaden Reed, Tucker Kraft, Dontavian Wicks, Carl Brooks, Carrington Valentine. None of those guys are stars, but they got a lot of quality in this class, despite having the 18th only. Sorry, they had the ninth most draft capital. So they had a top 10 team in terms of draft capital. Well, I'm going to go through each of the top 10 teams, and then I'm going to cherry pick a couple others to talk about. So the Chargers were the sixth ranked, and they had the 22nd most draft capital. Well, who did they get for having the 22nd ranked draft capital? Well, the Chargers roughed it up in the first round. Quentin Johnston is a bust so far. Tuli Tuipotalo, the defensive line, the edge player, is where they got, I think, the majority of their value. Dalen Henley, the linebacker, has been a decent player for them and also is a value. Then Darius Davis, the wide receiver, Jordan McFadden, offensive lineman, Scott Matlock, Max Duggan. So they got a little bit from Scott Matlock, the defensive tackle, in the sixth round, but the majority of their value came from their second round and third round picks, Tuli and Henley. Don't love their class. So that's the first one that for me feels pretty off. The Patriots at seven. As we talked about, the Patriots had a second team all pro in Christian Gonzalez, who was hurt his rookie year, but he was their first pick. Then Keon White has been a great player with their second round pick. That's two really, really strong picks to kick off their draft. Then they get Marte Maipu, a defensive back, has been okay, not great. Jake Andrews, offensive lineman's not been much. Chad Ryland, a kicker. Saidi Sow, a offensive lineman, has been a starter for them. Antonio Mafi, another offensive lineman. Kayshon Boutte, wide receiver. They've gotten some production out of him. Bryce Behringer, the punter. Demario Douglas, the wide receiver. They've gotten pretty decent production out of him for a sixth round pick. And so I think a lot of the value from this came from their first two picks in Keon White and Christian Gonzalez. But they also got some later round value from a guy like DeMario Davis. I still don't, I don't think that would be where I would rank. I would not rank them as one of the top three or four drafts. We'll kind of get into this where I think the top drafts are out of this class, the way I look at it. Buffalo is there at eighth. They had the 24th most draft capital. And Buffalo came out of this draft with, Dalton Kincaid, the tight end, Osiris Torrance, the offensive lineman. Those two guys have been starters for them. And so that's where they get the bulk of the value. They also drafted Dorian Williams, the linebacker, in the third round. He has been a starter for a season. So they got four starter seasons from their first two picks and a fifth starter season from Dorian Williams. That's a lot of value, despite having, you know, the 24th most draft capital to work with. So they had the 25th pick overall and the 59th pick in the second round. They had their first three rounds and they made the most of it. Those three picks have been pretty darn good. So we'll skip over. Well, we'll look at the Jags here for a second. The Jags rank ninth. And the Jags had the 14th most draft capital. Who did the Jaguars? It's hard for me to, like, the Jags had a ton of picks. The Jags had 13 picks, which is wild. They took Anton Harrison, offensive lineman, in the first round. Brenton Strange, the tight end. Tank Bigsby. Ventrell Miller, the linebacker. Tyler Stacy, defensive end. Yasir Abdullah, the linebacker. Antonio Johnson. Like, this is not a good class. And I think that they were able to rank highly in approximate value just because of the sheer number of picks that they had. So I think this is definitely one of the lower classes and one of the least impressive given the capital they had to work with. The Bengals round out the top 10. They had the 26th most draft capital. What did the Bengals do? They took DJ Turner, defensive back, Jordan Battle, defensive back, Charlie Jones, wide receiver, Chase Brown, the running back, is where they got the most of their value. You know, he's become a primary rusher for them. Andre Yoshivas, the wide receiver, has been a good player for them in the sixth round. So despite not having a lot to work with, Miles Murphy, their first round pick, has been a zero. Chase Brown, Andre Yoshivas, as well as DJ Turner and Jordan Battle, that's where they've gotten some value. But here's where I look at this. I look at these classes and I say, I think starter seasons is probably a better way to look at this. Now, the Houston Texans had the most draft capital of any team in the draft. So that's where this gets complicated. But I don't think you can look at that draft where they come out with CJ Stroud and Will Anderson and not think that that's one of the best draft classes in this 2023 class. Juice Scruggs has given them some starter time. Tank Dell, the wide receiver in the third round, has been incredibly talented when on the field, but has had struggles to stay on the field. They've gotten some starter play from Henry Toa, the linebacker. So I think this is in the conversation for the best draft class of the 2023 group in terms of total talent extracted. I don't care how much draft capital you had, how much talent did you end up with? I think the Texans are in that conversation for sure. The team that was tied with them for most starter seasons with the Pittsburgh Steelers. If we look at the Steelers draft class, I think that's where it can get a little bit misleading, but it's not a bad class. They got Broderick Jones, who's been a 2-year starter for them with their first pick, Joey Porter Jr., the cornerback, been a decent player for them, 2-year starter. Keanu Benton, nose tackle, has been a 2-year starter. Darnell Washington, the tight end. Those are 4 solid picks. Nick Herbig, the linebacker, has been a decent pass rusher for them as well, has already has 8.5 sacks. So I think the Steelers draft class is pretty good. I don't know that I'm a huge fan of Broderick Jones overall, but Joey Porter Jr., Keanu Benton, Darnell Washington, Nick Herbig, that's a solid class. That's not a great class. So I don't think it belongs in the category of most talent extracted from the 2023 draft. The Rams are absolutely in the conversation. They are absolutely in the conversation. We've already gone over their class. I think they rival, and maybe depending, like CJ Stroud, it's just hard when you get a franchise quarterback. It's hard to say that somebody did better than you, because the Rams didn't get a franchise quarterback, but it is probably as well as you can do without getting one. You know, Byron Young, Kobe Turner, plus starters, both of them. Puka Nacua, all-pro level player. And Steve Avila is a solid starter. It's a really, really good class. And it's across the board, offense and defense. The other classes that are probably in the conversation, I think, are Detroit and maybe Seattle. Let's talk about those two teams and what they got out of this. So Detroit, it might be my favorite class in this draft. Detroit, they surprised everybody by going running back first. They took Jahmyr Gibbs first, then Jack Campbell at linebacker, Sam Laporta, Brian Branch. That is pretty damn good to start your draft. The first, like, 3 of those 4 players are absolute franchise-changing talents. Gibbs, Laporta, and Brian Branch are elite players. Then they took Hendon Hooker, who's a backup. Don't know how he's going to turn out. Broderick Martin, defensive tackle. Colby Sorsall, the offensive lineman. And then Antoine Green, receivers. They really didn't do much after, but they got so much value in those first 4 picks. That's a franchise changing draft that the Lions had. I think it's at least on par with the Rams draft. And if you look at it, I think you give the Rams a little bit of a nod because the Lions had the 3rd most draft capital. The Rams had the 21st most draft capital. So if you're talking about who had the more impressive performance in the draft, it's the Rams. And I think that's probably the case, period. Like, given the capital they had to work with, the Rams had the most impressive 2023 draft. As far as total talent taken out, they're in the conversation. Houston and Detroit are at least right there, neck and neck with them. The Seahawks are an interesting one. And then the Seahawks had the 2nd most draft capital in that 2023 class. They had the 5th overall pick. They had 2 first round picks. They had 5th overall pick. They had the 20th overall pick. They had 2 second round picks at 37 and 52. They did not have a 3rd round pick. Devin Witherspoon and Jackson Smith and Jigba. Devin Witherspoon's made the Pro Bowl in each of his first 2 seasons. He's one of the only players from this class to do it. By some all-pro voting, not AP, he's been a second team all-pro by some groups. He was in the conversation for defensive rookie of the year. Jackson Smith and Jigba, wide receiver, Pro Bowler last year, number 1 receiver essentially for the Seahawks, in the conversation for best receiver in that class. Now, Puka Nacua has that title. We will see over time which of those guys ends up in that regard. And there's Jordan Addison and Zay Flowers that absolutely are in that conversation as well. Then you have Derek Hall, the edge rusher, who started off not so well, but had a very strong second season with 8 sacks. And then they go Zach Charbonnet. And that's the interesting pick there, because while Zach Charbonnet has actually been a pretty good player for the Seahawks, it's a running back. So positional value wise, don't know how great that is. He is the fifth. He has the fifth most rushing yards of any player drafted in that year. Bijan Robinson has the most rushing yards, then Jahmyr Gibbs, then Devon Achane, then Chase Brown, and then Zach Charbonnet. What's worth kind of calling out there is Achane and Chase Brown both were drafted after, well after Zach Charbonnet. So I don't think it's a question of whether Zach Charbonnet is a good player or a talented player. But as far as value, let's look for a second as we kind of focus in on the Seahawks. Here are some other players that were drafted after Zach Charbonnet. You got Jervin Dexter for the Bears, been a decent player for them. You've got Tuli Tuipulotu for the Chargers. He's definitely been a good edge player. Rashee Rice, who's troubled but talented at receiver. You've got Osiris Torrance, the starter offensive lineman. Would the Seahawks be better off if they had Osiris Torrance than Zach Charbonnet? Maybe. You've got Tank Dell. I don't know that you'd be better, but you definitely, Byron Young was taken 20 picks, 18 picks after Zach Charbonnet. Garrett Williams, the talented nickel corner for the Cardinals. There's decent number of, Byron Young, the Raiders, is a different player than Byron Young for the Rams. So that Byron Young for the Rams, the one that's good, was taken 25 picks after Zach Charbonnet. So I think opportunity cost wise, the Zach Charbonnet pick is hard to defend. As far as quality of player, it's not bad. You can't say that that's a bad player that they got out of that pick. Then they got Anthony Bradford. He's been a 2-year starter, but not been a good player. Cam Young's been nothing for them so far. Mike Morris has not been much. Olu Oluwatimi became a starter late last year. We'll find out if he continues to start this year. Jarek Reed, the safety, has been injured quite a bit, but was on his way to being a Pro Bowl special teams player as a rookie. We'll see what happens for him in his third season. And then Kenny McIntosh, the running back, last pick of that draft. You could argue that the Seahawks, pick for pick, the Seahawks are in the conversation for best draft class. Like, I think you start at the top with Devin Witherspoon. The opportunity cost there was really Jalen Carter. And if they had drafted Jalen Carter, I think the franchise trajectory is probably a little bit different. Does not mean that Devin Witherspoon's not a great player. Seahawks probably would be better off if they had drafted Jalen Carter. But Witherspoon, JSN, Derek Hall, those are three guys you don't regret taking. And a lot of teams would be happy to have them on their team. Zach Charbonnet is a solid player. He's a starting level running back. And then you've got Olu Oluwatimi, who looks like he may be your starter at center. And I'd watch out for Jarek Reed and Kenny McIntosh. I don't think their contributions are capped yet. So I think the Seahawks, given that they had the second most draft capital, they did pretty well with it. If they had taken Jalen Carter, if they had taken someone other than Zach Charbonnet in the second round that was a higher value position, it'd pretty much be right up there with any of these other classes. Given all these factors, I think the Rams, the Texans, and the Lions are at the top of the draft classes. But man, the Washington Commanders, that draft class, Emmanuel Forbes, not even on the team anymore, 16th overall pick, Quan Martin, the defensive back, Ricky Stromberg in the third round, Braden Daniels, KJ Henry, Chris Rodriguez, and Andre Jones. That is an awful, awful draft class. Wow. That is just awful. And I think if you look at the Carolina Panthers, that's going to be a fascinating one to watch over time. It looked like it was going to be a disaster. Bryce Young started to find it last year, but Jonathan Mingo, the wide receiver, has not been good. DJ Johnson, the linebacker, has not been good. Chandler Zavala, not good. Jammie Robinson. They had among the highest amounts of draft capital in this class, and they ended up with among the least amount of talent. Now, Bryce Young could still become a good quarterback, and if he does, that's very valuable. But, man, they really blew that draft for the most part. So those are kind of some of the teams that stood out to me. I'm going to go ahead and check Super Chat here. We've got one from Kane Muss who said, would Jalen Carter be as good if the Seahawks had drafted him? And that's a fair question. I think that most likely he would have been. Yes, he got to play with his Georgia buddies, and yes, he didn't have to be a number one defensive lineman right away. He was in a good position. But I think he's just incredibly talented. And the thing that was the question mark was whether he was going to play hard, whether he was going to care, whether he's going to be a malcontent. And so far, that just hasn't been an issue. So, yeah, I do think he probably would have been pretty much the same player if he had been in Seattle. I'm curious, you know, as you guys look back and as we kind of zero in a little bit more on the Seahawks here, my immediate reaction, you can go back and find the shows when I talked about this, was that I felt like that was a pivotal draft for the Seahawks. With the amount of draft capital they had, a top five pick, two firsts, two seconds, they had to knock it out of the park in order to take that next step. I don't think they did that. I think teams like the Lions and the Rams did that. I think teams like the Texans did that. And if you look at the impact that CJ Stroud and Will Anderson have had on the Texans, if you look at the impact that Jahmyr Gibbs and Sam Laporta and Jack Campbell, you know, had on the Lions. You know, it's just, and Brian Branch. I mean, those guys completely changed that team. And then you look at the Rams with Puka Nacua, Byron Young, Kobe Turner, Steve Avila. The Rams would not be the team they are right now without that draft class. And so I think the Seahawks certainly did well. They didn't, it wasn't a bad class. They didn't like blow it. But as of right now, I'm not sure that they came out of that draft with the amount of epic roster changing, game changing talent that you'd hope they would have with that much draft capital. I give that class a B+ in terms of what they got out of it for the amount of capital they had to use. I'd give it probably an A- in terms of total value, like amount of guys that they got that are good players. But when you have that many picks and that high of picks, you kind of, the expectations are pretty high as well. So that is a review of that 2023 class. And we talk about the 2022 class for the Seahawks a lot. I think that was a better draft class than the 2023 class, which I think says something as well, because the Seahawks had a lot of draft capital in 2022, but not as much as they had in 2023. So the other thing that I was going to take a moment on is just some Seahawks related news. And there have been some more visits even since we talked yesterday. And I think, if I recall, I want to make sure I've got this right. Got to look up one thing before I update you guys all. Okay, yeah, so we've got another confirmed visit. Let's get this up there. So the visits are fast and furious right now. Since we last spoke, the Seahawks have been confirmed to have Shamar Stewart, the edge rusher, in for a visit. Will Johnson, the cornerback, in for a visit. Zah Frazier was just reported recently in for a visit. And Jihad Campbell, the linebacker, he posted on his Instagram story yesterday that he posted a picture of him flying over Seattle. And then I think somebody reported that he was in for a visit. So, or they just were looking at Instagram, not sure, but in any event, those are some big names. Three of those names are first round pick, 18th overall level names to be considering. And when you look at the names that the Seahawks have talked about, let me just give you the names of the guys that could be, that have visited the Seahawks and could be 18th overall pick worthy. Nick Amonwori, the safety. Nick Amonwori, the safety. Mykel Williams, edge rusher. Tet McMillan, the wide receiver. Shamar Stewart, the edge rusher, Will Johnson, the cornerback, and Jihad Campbell, the linebacker. Those are all guys that could be 18th pick worthy that are not offensive linemen either, by the way. Now, a couple guys that may be in that conversation, even if I don't personally think they're 18th pick worthy necessarily, Jalen Milroe was a visit for them. And maybe you could make the case Mason Taylor might sneak into the first round. So he was also a visit. But keep in mind, some of these are guys they may be considering trading up. They have a lot of draft capital, 5 picks in the first 92. As far as, by the way, who has the most draft capital in the 2023 draft? The Seahawks have the 7th most draft capital. Worth noting that the 49ers are right above them with the 6th. But the Seahawks have, as far as the top 100, I don't think any team has more picks in the top 100 than the Seahawks do with 5. So again, if they're talking about trading up in the second round, some of these names could be in the mix as well. So Savon Revelle Jr., the cornerback. And yes, it is pronounced Savon, not Siobhan. Mason Taylor, the tight end. I talked about Milroe. I think those are all guys that could be early second round picks. I'm really happy that Zah Frazier was a visit. I think that guy I loved. I went into the combine being a Darian Porter guy that was really looking forward to seeing him. I left there down on Darian Porter and high on Zah Frazier. I think that guy is an interesting one to watch for sure. And if you look at the positions that the Seahawks have had these visits with, we've got one safety, We've got three wide receivers, Savion Williams, who's kind of a slash wide receiver, running back, you know, all sorts of things. Kyle Williams and Tet McMillan are all receivers. Offensive linemen that they've met with, Issa Pohl from Washington State, Bryce Cabledue, Chase Lunt, Nash Jones, Dylan Fairchild, the guard, Jackson Slater, and Jared Wilson. So they have met with 4, 5, 6, 7 offensive linemen. Of those, a lot of those guys are potentially like later round guys. I don't think Jackson Slater is going to go on day one or day two. I don't think Dylan Fairchild will probably go on day one or day two. I don't think Issa Pohl might not be drafted. Same with Nash Jones. We'll see. But Bryce Cabledue and Chase Lunt are like day three tackles. So, you know, a little bit of a mix. Jared Wilson's hard to peg where he'll go. I think he's a third round talent. He might need to go in the second round if you want to get him. So again, 7 offensive linemen, by far the most, but a lot of those guys are kind of edge guys, by the way, tackles. And then they've met with 2 edge rushers, Mykel Williams and Shamar Stewart. And they've met with 1 defensive tackle in Ty Robinson. And they met with 2 quarterbacks, Jalen Milroe and Tyler Shuck. So an interesting eclectic mix that the Seahawks have had in for 30 visits. Also an interesting story that came out yesterday that the initially stated the Rams don't do 30 visits. And they don't necessarily. I guess the Jags are going to not do them either. But it's not because they don't meet with the teams. The Rams kind of skirt the process because 30 visits apparently have to be reported, which then ended up getting out into press. And teams don't want to tip their picks or their interest in players. So the Rams send around a guy to visit the players across the country instead of having them come to the facility. And by doing that, you don't have to report those visits. So sneaky little move. Good for them. But they're still meeting with these guys the same as anybody else. They're just not bringing them to the facility. So interesting mix of players that have been going to Seattle. I think the ones that get me the most excited, I mean, honestly, there's a lot of these guys on this list I'd be excited about. The Zoff Frazier one's really cool because I think he'd be a great day three pick if you could get him. The Will Johnson one's really interesting. I mean, that's 2 different cornerbacks that you're meeting with. And Will Johnson could be a sneaky pick in the first round. I don't want them to go small. I don't want them to go corner, personally. I would rather them go with someone who's more physical, closer to the line of scrimmage. Even Jihad Campbell, I'm not thrilled about taking an off-ball linebacker at 18, but Jihad Campbell may end up being one of the best defensive players in this draft and is going to be involved with all sorts of plays on defense. I could kind of get behind that. He's also a very physical player. Cornerback is going to have a lesser ability, and you've already spent a lot of draft capital and had some success with corner. I'd rather go later. I'd rather get Zoff Frazier in day 3 than Will Johnson on day 1, not because I think Zoff Frazier is a better player, but because I think that's a better use of your draft capital. And then, I mean, the wide receiver stuff, all the wide receivers they've met with are day 1 or day 2 guys. And so I think that at least indicates wide receiver is certainly on their list of guys that and positions that they're looking to add to. I really hope they don't go that direction in the first round. I think that would be a disaster. Otherwise, I mean, I don't have a lot of complaints about the guys they're meeting with. I'm not a huge Mykel Williams fan. You know, I'm not a huge, like, I just don't like some of the first, like, Tet McMillan in the first, I just don't love that. But I mean, Nick Emmanuori, I just think is going to be a star. I'm intrigued by Savion Williams, although I have some concerns about him. It depends on where they would take him. But Bryce Cabledew, Chase Lunt are really solid swing tackles. Savon Revelle Jr. at corner, I'd much rather him in the second round than Will Johnson in the first. Mason Taylor, I love at tight end. Jared Wilson, love at center. Ty Robinson, I think is a sleeper in the defensive tackle group, and absolutely someone that if you can get him day three, it's a steal. I'd rather not spend a day two pick, a second or third round pick on him. But I think he'd be a great, like if you get him in the fourth or fifth round, that's a really good pick. And Shamar Stewart, you know, I continue to have this debate with people and they're like, Shamar Stewart is a disaster. He has no production as a pass rusher. And I'm like, I 100% agree on the floor. Shamar Stewart could be a mediocre edge player. I don't think he can be a bad edge player. I don't think that. I don't think he'd be a bust, but I think he could be a guy that doesn't put up a lot of numbers. But if you want to know, people say, well, show me a college edge player who was just a great athlete and had no production, and how did he, that turned out to be good? Well, Daniil Hunter had 4.5 sacks in college, and he's pretty good. Trayvon Walker, maybe, you know, you don't feel like he's the best player, but he had 9.5 sacks in college. He's done okay in the NFL. I think Shamar Stewart, if I hadn't seen it with my own eyes, I wouldn't feel this way. But I saw Shamar Stewart go up against the best offensive lineman in this class and be the best player on the field. He was better than any of the other edge rushers in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. He had more to bring each snap that, like, there was, you could see almost fear in the eyes of the offensive lineman because he has so much speed to power, such a quick get off. There's just a lot to work with there. So yeah, he has not been productive, but there's nothing anyone can tell me that will convince me that Shamar Stewart is not a high ceiling player. I think he is the highest ceiling edge rusher in this class outside of Abdul Carter. Is he going to reach that ceiling? Who knows? That involves coaching. That involves the player. That's part of why the Seahawks are probably meeting with him, to get a better feel for whether they think he's going to become that guy. But I am Shamar Stewart and Nick Emmanuori. I believe those guys are not just great athletes. I think they can be game-changing players. But we are closing in. We're like a little more than a week out from the NFL draft. It's coming fast. And tomorrow, I'm really, really excited about tomorrow's show. We're going to have Matt Harmon from Reception Perception on. We talk all wide receivers. We're going to talk a lot about wide receivers. He does great work. So we're going to have Matt on. That is going to be at 7 a.m. Pacific time. So, my goodness, why can't I get this going? Yeah, this is going to be at 7 a.m. Pacific time tomorrow. We'll have Matt Harmon from Reception Perception on. Then Friday, Ryan Fowler from the Draft Network will be on. Saturday, we'll do Seahawks Saturday with Jeff Simmons. Sunday, we'll have the Seahawks Draft Roundtable with Griff Sturgeon and Rob Staton. So all good stuff. And then tonight, Wednesday night, 6 o'clock Pacific time, we will have Real Hawk Talk with Nathan Ernst and Jeff Simmons. So make sure you tune in for that. We will probably do a bunch of mock drafts and have some fun. Keep an eye out for if you are at patreon.com/hawkblogger or you are a club level or higher YouTube member, I will give you guys instructions for how to fill out your draft predictions for the first round. We'll do that. I'll get that set up probably today, and I'll get that sent out to all of you. If you don't know, I will be at the VMAC for the draft. I will be live streaming the entire draft from there. I will then talk to each of the players after they're drafted. I will talk to John Schneider and Mike McDonald at the end of each day of the draft. So a ton of coverage coming up. And then hopefully, I don't know, because I haven't been through it before, hopefully I'll get to go to rookie minicamp and watch those guys perform. Don't know if that's how it works, but I'll find out soon enough. If you are watching the show or listening to the show, one, give the show a like, click subscribe, would greatly appreciate it. Almost to 18,000 subscribers here on YouTube. Would love to get there before the draft. I think we're only a couple hundred folks away, so click subscribe. Also, if you're listening to the audio version of this pod, please give it a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. Really trying to get more recent reviews in there. And so would really appreciate you guys just taking a moment, give it a 5-star review. It would really help me out. I'd greatly appreciate it. All right, folks, that'll do it for this episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings as we recap the 2023 draft class. A lot of interesting players and a lot of interesting outcomes there. Seahawks end up with three Pro Bowl seasons, the second only to Detroit in terms of the amount of Pro Bowler seasons that they got out of that class. Really interesting results there. If the Seahawks were to replicate that draft this year, I don't think anyone would complain, but a lot of value they need to get out of this one. 5 picks in the top 92. It's coming just a little bit more than a week away. Until I see y'all next, I'm Brian M. Hauser. This has been another edition of Hawk Blogger Mornings. Take care, y'all.